Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, Zach and Ian, we're going to talk about the Asian Connection from 1998.
It's from the future.
It's from the future. It's a lovely little, no, I'm not going to call it a Steven Seagal movie, because he's a bill of goods in this.
He was one of the executive producers.
Him, yeah, and Tom Sizemore came up with the story.
It's the inevitable evolution of Seagal, where, you know, he films most of his movies sitting down.
Right.
And the inevitable way it goes is now he's also in less and less of the actual movie.
That makes sense.
He ad-libs all his dialogue.
He's graduated out of being in the movies.
They try to put in things that might make him seem like a more complex person in voiceover. Like at the end when he's...
Oh, right, yeah.
At the end,
he doesn't even do the voiceover for it.
No, it's the girl, you know? And it's a completely inconsequential, unnecessary movie.
Painfully unnecessary.
Far beyond the normal unnecessary nature of most movies, which... You know, when it's all said and done, most of them don't matter except for a handful.
Right.
Hot Rod, things like that.
Right. Yeah, we were talking about how, like, you got two bank robbers, they're supposed to be buddies, there could be some kind of humor there, even if it's, like, pulled tropes from other things that we've seen before, it might at least, you know, elicit a mild chuckle, but they didn't do any of that.
No.
The execution, I was commenting on this... Just the execution of the shots and editing.
It annoyed me far more than the movie. Every time I tried to point something out about the movie, you're like, yeah, and it looks like they don't even know how to shoot it. Who cares?
Well, I mean,
who cares?
You're watching a movie.
It doesn't matter. The technical aspects of a garbage Netflix film are completely irrelevant. We watched it because it's supposed to suck.
But I understand, but it's supposed to be enjoyable.
And it's one of those that sucks... Not bad enough to actually be enjoyable. I want it to be suckier.
Right. Yeah. You know? They tried to really tack on a story, but they...
Well, not just that, but like, you know, the actors were... They got bad enough actors.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
That should have been fine. But the dialogue wasn't up to snuff. It was just mostly people calling each other buddy and babe.
Yeah. It was not... There just wasn't anything there, like you said, you know? There was... It wasn't like some old-time screenwriter like came in to punch it up for a second.
Well, no, here's what I was trying to tell you during the movie, which you kept trying to turn into something about the technical aspects of the movie. And once again, who cares?
Right, good point.
Is that people are making these movies, yes?
Right,
that's undeniable. They're making the movies.
It's not robots yet.
They have to be making money off of them in order to be making them, right?
Generally.
Okay. That said, they could hire any geek off the street...
Mm-hmm.
Who's not handy with their steel to come in and write a movie better than that. So they come up with a story, right? Tom Sizemore and some buddy of his are in a bar.
Yeah.
They're in a bar, and they come up with this idea, right?
Right.
It's a really high concept. Really high concept.
Right, yeah. Classic noir storyline.
So stupid. It's dumb. A couple people rob a bank. They accidentally rob from the wrong guy. So,
mafia.
So some other guy, you know, so he gets his middleman. You take care of that money. You told me it was safe. The middleman.
Spoiler alert.
The middleman is crooked.
He wants to take the money off the top
for himself.
Wet his beak.
Wet his beak a little bit. So anyway, he crosses Seagal in the process.
Right.
And then it's about this guy being forced to rob banks with his buddy.
Right.
And all for the woman he loves is his reasoning. Right?
I guess. Yeah, because he wants to give her all the money. Not so she can like go to school or do something noble with
it. No, he's like, do what you want with it. But we got to sit on it for a while, you know? His main problem in the whole movie was that people weren't sitting on the money long enough.
I think so, yeah.
That's the premise, right? Mm-hmm. I just told it to you in like 30 seconds. If you had seed money...
Yeah, even if I just had a free weekend.
I wouldn't just go like, hey, all right, let's hire some hack guys to punch that out.
Sure.
I would hire some hack guys, but hack guys who had any ounce of creativity.
You could get like an Akiva Goldsman.
Anybody with an ounce of creativity to just come in and pound that really quick. You know what? The screenwriter for that movie probably got paid $5,000, right? If we're being generous, right?
Okay, yeah.
The actual screenwriter, I would have taken that money. I would have put a few jokes in there.
Yeah.
They could have told me exactly what they wanted out of it, and I would have done it. I would have given Seagal more to chew on.
Mm.
Once again, though, I think Seagal just has, you know, he's the Asian crime boss. He's not actually Asian. They make a point of, in the Netflix thing, it's like, he plays against type as an Asian mobster. It says that. He's not Asian, first of all. And second of all, he doesn't play against type. He just plays Steven Seagal.
Basically.
He mumbles, he sits in chairs, he punches people, you know, and he has disgusting sex with somebody who's 70 years his junior.
And he's, like, clearly, like, foolish in this. Like, he doesn't really know what's going on.
A few times, he, like, personally threatens the guy who's the rat.
Uh-huh.
And then the guy's like, I'm not the rat, sir. And he's like, I'll give you one more chance. Like, over and over and over, right?
You think I'm fucking stupid?
Yeah, and then at the end, like, he doesn't even get to kill his rat. No. The white guy kills
the
rat.
Does he even know that that guy was the rat?
Yeah, he tells him. He's like, I killed you for him. He goes, thank you. Uh-huh. Remember that?
Yeah.
Like, as he's laying there dying, he's like, we killed the guy for you. Doesn't that count for anything? He's like, yeah, I guess, sure.
Yeah.
Thanks, by the way.
Pissing in my yard, huh?
But like, you know, anybody could have just punched that up.
We can do it right now. We can just be like, we can just do like, boom. So give the girlfriend something more.
First of all, they never said that since they want out, right?
You could have even just had that at the very beginning that like, hey, we're good, we're set, we're going to go somewhere, and then the guy grabs him and threatens him and keeps him in, and then there's more of a sense of you like, oh, they're trying to get out of this life. They didn't even really convey that. Mm. I mean, even little stuff, right?
I just would have...
Jokes, obviously.
I just would have put a little bit more levity in there.
Oh, absolutely, you know? Yeah.
I watched...
there was nothing pleasant about it.
I watched Inglourious Basterds again last night, and there's just so many parts where, like, things shouldn't be funny, but they are. And he just puts little pieces.
Sure.
Like, you know, in the very beginning even, like, one of the most intense parts of the movie where the guy shows up at the French farmhouse.
Right, yeah.
And there's this, like, a few minutes in, they're having this tense discussion. And he goes, the guy's been smoking his pipe for a while. And then...
but the pipe is funny.
Waltz goes, do you mind if I smoke my pipe? Right, he's like, sure. And he pulls this massive blunderbuss-looking pipe out of his pocket and starts smoking that. Just like little bits all the way through that. And like all the characters of the Bastards are really funny. There's just like funny lines all the way through it. It's a brilliant movie. The more I watch it, the more I think I enjoyed that more than any other Tarantino movie. There's something about it.
I didn't like it as much when I watched it here about a year ago as I was expecting.
I like it more every time.
But I think maybe like a third watch.
His movies more and more don't make sense as films, but they just work.
Oh,
like
sure,
he's just, you know, he's untouchable at this point.
He knows how to write a movie, I mean, that's for sure.
But anyway, there are countless people. Hollywood is littered with gravestones of people who could have written better movies than whatever hack they did to do that. And, you know, to the hack's credit, I'm sure that was exactly what the studio wanted. They were like, hey, this is exactly what we want, just do that. By the way, that's a good writing tip. If you want to make money and
do what the studio says.
If you're given the job, give them exactly what they want.
Well,
it doesn't matter if it's good. It doesn't matter.
Well, yeah.
You know, that Tom Lennon and Robert Ben Grant book is pretty good because one of the tips that's really important is somebody gives you a terrible, terrible note, right? Your job, you can say, you can argue with it if you want.
Right.
They're probably not going to rehire
you. Ultimately, you're going to do it.
Do it.
Yeah.
And make it work. If, you know, if it doesn't make sense, your job is just to make it work. That just makes them happy.
Well, I think that when I remember reading the book, what I got out of it, it was like you can trick yourself into thinking it's a fun challenge to try your best to make it to work, but ultimately you still are going to do it. You're still going to execute it and be like, okay, so...
Well, not just that, but the idea...
Make the love interest 10 years younger now, and it's like, oh, that just...
But the main idea behind that book, which makes the most sense, is... By making them happy, even if it's trash,
then you keep getting hired.
Then they rehire you.
Yeah, it's like any job. Oh, well, heaven forbid, if you do a good job, then people will
want to hire you. That's not a good job. That's the point.
Well, no,
in writing, it's not about a good job.
No, but
it's just about making them happy.
It's the client.
The problem is they're an idiot.
Yeah.
They're idiots. They're stupid. They're
dumb. A lot of times.
And if anything happens to be good, they got lucky because it's not due to them.
A lot of times,
it's not due to the producer. It's not due to the person who's hiring the writers, whatever. It's a happy accident when something actually good gets made.
Every now and again, some kind of producer might know what they're doing. It'd be like, you should cut that scene, but, you know.
Anyway, that was my point. And you were like, yeah, they didn't even frame that shot well. And I'm like, shut up.
Well,
nobody cares about the shot.
It speaks to like a whole greater
sense they made a movie.
Ineptitude.
You know, several hundred people there made a movie.
Yeah, at least.
Probably not even, I don't know. Who knows?
Star out of five.
Are you rating it already?
Well, I'm going to move on to other things unless you want to go.
I could talk about it for hours.
Want to rewrite the movie.
What's it called?
The Asian Connection.
Asian Connection, that's right.
Which didn't make that much sense. Because that would imply there was some kind of conspiracy or scheme connecting it to other parts of the world.
Yeah, there was something about like Thailand and Cambodia going across the border and everything. But
not really.
Seagal had a line early on where he goes, I first moved here, I fell in love with
Asia.
And I was thinking like,
Is Asia a person?
Well, that's like a million square miles of, like, that's a massive region of the globe is Asia, right. You know? It extends from the middle of the Pacific to Africa. Like, that's Asia.
Right, it's big. It's the biggest of the continents.
By far.
Yeah.
But, like, even, you know, it's fun. I've been listening to, like, a hardcore history podcast, and so much of, like, what we consider Europe was considered Asia throughout history.
Right.
Like, anything east of, like, France was Asia.
Did you listen to all the Wrath of the Khans one yet? Because I listened
to that. No, I've only listened to a couple of the older ones, but I got sick and tired. Well, I didn't get sick and tired. I ran out of Comedy Bang Bangs to listen to, so I just, on a whim, downloaded the new one, which was 6 hours of...
Him talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis?
No, it was...
I think that's the newest
one. No, the newest one is the Celts.
Oh, interesting.
The Eradication of the Celts by Julius Caesar.
History is important. It's important for storytelling. Like you said, that's how you arrive at good stories.
I didn't say anything of the sort, but okay. No, sounds like you're trying to make a point of what I'm saying.
You were
I wasn't.
I don't know.
I wasn't at all.
Sorry, it was a weak segue.
Into what, though? I feel like you're trying to push aside the Asian connection.
The Asian connection? I'm trying to...
This is the Asian connection podcast.
I'm trying to discern the Asian connection.
Oh, so there's more, okay? So
you're so excited to think there's more.
Credits, right? This main guy, somebody I've never seen before. It looks like the brother from True Blood, but it's not.
John Lee Edward or something.
John Edwards Lee or something like that. He had all his names were names of a Kennedy, I think. I don't know about Lee. But and then some Asianish girl.
Lee Harvey Oswald killed a Kennedy.
Sure. Hey, there we go. Perfect.
Yeah.
It's all tied together.
Yeah.
And that's what goes back to what you were saying about history.
It does.
And then it says, you know, Steven Seagal. Mm-hmm. Then it's got a bunch of random Asians who actually end up, like, one of them is kind of like the main character. Like, he's the rat, you know?
You think the rat ends up being the closest thing to the main character?
We see just more. He's the third. He's the third lead. Maybe even the second lead.
Well, where do you think the girl is then? Because she's like the second.
She's supposed to be the second. She's probably. Let's go call sheet.
Okay.
John Edward Lee Kennedy.
Yeah.
He's the main guy. Number two. On the call sheet. Jack. Well, no, that's not fair. Let's because go call Jack. Sheet, call so sheet Jack. Is who gets paid for what. But
no, I think call sheet is who has the most time in the day.
But that's. I don't know about that.
But yeah, you might be who gets getting paid the most. That would make the most.
Anyway,
sense.
Michael J. White is in it.
Yeah,
and he
gets a with credit.
He's heavily credit. No, in the beginning it showed Steven Seagal had the final and Steven.
Yeah,
Seagal.
But yeah, it's got a with Michael J. White.
I don't remember if it did. But his name was like first. Like, they showed his name
his
first.
His name was, on the Netflix thing, was second after Steven Seagal. So you're right, they front-loaded that.
But then in the front credits, it showed his name way before it showed all the other people.
Quite a bit, yeah.
So, he's in one scene.
Yeah.
And there's no conflict. The guy shows up and goes, hey, I used to run some stuff. There's no conflict. No, he shows up and goes, hey, I used to deliver for you, by the way. Here's an exposition.
Open the packages.
He gets an exposition. Yeah. He's like, I know you sell guns. And the guy's like, oh yeah? You got any money? And he pulls out some money. He's like, okay, what do you want? He's like, I want guns. And then he takes him upstairs, and he shows him some guns. And the guy's like, yeah, I'll take these guns. And he goes, you got it.
Yep.
Like, that was unnecessary. But yet they paid Michael J. White to do that role.
But do you think in the greater... So it's called the Asian Connection. Do you think maybe this is implying there's a connection to, like, let's call it the Asian verse, where there's going to be other storylines, and Michael J. White's just kind of like playing this character like a Michael Keaton and Out of Sight kind of scenario with Jackie Brown, and he's going to appear and have a greater role to play in other storylines in his
Ray Nicolette. You think he's the Ray Nicolette?
Yeah, I think he's the Ray Nicolette. He's like, I was promised three more
movies. There are several Michael J. White Netflix movies that are pretty decent. Like, there are several of these that are made pretty well. I think I told you about
one. That's the problem.
There's one that had Michael J. White, Dolph Lundgren, Tony Jaa, And
already this is sounding a million times better than Asian
Ron
Connection.
Perlman.
Okay, right. Yeah.
Yeah, like all those guys, and it was a really well staged action movie. Very violent. It was like Dolph Lundgren has his daughter is killed or something, and he just goes on this revenge spree. And Michael J. White is supposed to stop him, or Tony Jaa is supposed to stop him, and ends up like helping him, thing.
Because he understands the honor about
something like that. Yeah, or understands he's not the actual criminal. But it was like, it was really well done, and it was bloody and fast paced, and like it was everything this movie wasn't. This movie like was slow, and like you said, they did pad some time in there. I made the joke about the Garth Marenghi slow motion thing, but they padded some time really. Like I noticed on a movie I watched the other day when it was some garbage thing on Netflix. When they cut to a shot of somebody doing something in their kitchen, And then, like, the doorbell rings, and they take 20 seconds for them to walk across right. and then go over to the door and look through it and then open it. The whole time, I'm just going, like, come on, yeah. come on. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Cut to the door opening. Why did you shoot this?
They confused the whole thing that I think pinnacleized or whatever with Spectre, the opening scene of Spectre. Like, that's not the first time to do, like, a super long take. You got snake eyes, stuff like
this. No, that works. That works.
But now these guys think, oh, we'll do that. Yeah, right, we'll do that. But, like, we'll do, like, a super long follow shot to establish this warehouse.
I don't think any of that has... No, it's not even following shots. It's just, like, showing things that don't need to be shown.
Right, there's that too, yeah. Guy parks his car, gets out of his car, walks up to the door, knocks on the door, as opposed to guy just knocks on the door.
I feel like any point I make, you try to make it about something else.
No, that's exactly what you're saying. No. Is like you can cut out this.
Yeah, I know. Right? But what did that have to do with the opening of Spectre or Snake Eyes?
Well, because I'm being kind of facetious here, but I'm saying that I think these guys think that they see these long takes and in big movies as a thing, and they're like, oh, it's a thing everyone's doing now. It's like you got to do your long takes. So, like, they think like, oh, the lady washing her dishes and then going to answer the door all in one shot is like a big deal. Or it's cheaper, obviously. They set up a master, they have them do that, and it's done. And then, like you said, it pads the runtime when they realize they've only got 77 minutes worth of actual, like, story there.
I'll say...
It shouldn't be a problem. I'd be all for, like, hey, 67 minutes. That's a movie? Fine. Whatever, you know?
Yeah. No. When something is in the 80s, I think you're probably fine. So, yeah. Like, I'd say if you were at 80, probably a little low. 82... That's okay.
Hey, man, 85, I'll watch it. Rat might taste like pumpkin pie. I mean, go for it, you know?
I miss Steven Seagal in this movie. Every time he was away, I missed him. They would bring him back, and I would feel like I was being reunited with family again.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's so oaken and and swollen, you know, just engorged on fine food.
What's the opposite of spry?
Slovenly and lazy and slothful and
he's the opposite of spry. That's for
yeah.
Sure.
You know he teaches he's got a bang maid and mm-hmm. he's teaching her some tai chi in one part and another part like
and he's telling stories.
Another part when all the montage where all the robberies are happening, it cuts to her like disrobing in front uh-huh. of him, and I wonder if that's also a writer in all his contracts. Like I've got to have a girl who's hideously younger than me, like disgustingly so. Disrobing in front of me so that I can see her naked and you can tell that I'm looking at her naked.
And then it's also like something like, and it also establishes that my character still has virility or something, maybe?
Probably. Insecurity, you know, about that. But like I said, like at the end, the only sort of nobility or anything they gave him was in that voiceover, like the voiceover of the girl as she's sitting on the beach, she's the one who escapes, the guy gets killed, he dies for her, like, you know, they've been telegramming.
Alexander Graham Belling.
Hearing
the whole thing.
Graham Belling for a long time. And she's like, I guess the reason why he didn't kill me was because, you know, he still had something soft compassion. Inside him, some compassion. And even a monster can have some compassion. And like, that was a voiceover they put in to explain why Seagal, who like, the last line of the movie is like, get the fuck out of here, or something like that. You know, that's his usual line. You know, it's funny how, and I don't know if you noticed this. You're so excited about the technical aspects of films, whatever. Do you notice that every time he talked, there was buzzing because they had to turn up his shit so high?
Noticed that it was low.
Because he just mumbles. Just mumbles and he doesn't want to give any sort of effort in terms of talking or whatever. So his stuff was through the roof.
Right.
And whatever sound mixing they did didn't take out the buzzing because, like, the mics weren't enough or something. I don't know. You know,
They thought they'd just crank up the gain.
How much would it have cost for them to, like, ADR... he could have come in later and just done a couple of voiceovers, right? Like, he barely moves his mouth, so you could just put in whatever. Yeah. You could put somebody else talking.
Get Joni Young Bosch to do it or something. Do, like, an anime.
But, you know, I missed... I'm excited for these other ones, because the other ones look like maybe there's a little more... Cigar. Though, that's the new thing. The new thing I've noticed on a lot of these in the last couple of years is they're trying not to make him the main character.
Even
so
Absolution.
Much.
Absolution, he wasn't the main character. That was the real abundantly clear, like, handing over of the torch.
Yeah, right. You're talking about, was that a Scott Adkins one?
I think so.
Yeah, Scott Adkins is another guy who's in a bunch of them, and those tend to be pretty well made because...
Remember, it was the guy with his sister, and it was like, he was like a criminal, but he wasn't like a bad guy. I remember he let the guy off that owed money at the beginning. and then it turned
into... I don't. I mean, they're all the same thing to me.
I vaguely remember it.
And all of them, he's a man who done bad things to folks.
But he's looking for redemption. Looking for,
he has to spell it out.
Every time.
But one of the... Honestly, like, you know, they show the clips now on Netflix as you're scrolling through things. You sit, stand on for more than a second and it shows the clips.
Yeah, just and telling you what happened.
I could have picked any of those, but I picked that one because there was a scene of him sitting in a chair punching people.
Right.
And it kills me that he thinks that's cool or whatever. Like, he obviously still has the physical agility to stand because he does it a couple times.
A little bit, yeah.
But maybe it's just that he weighs so much. You know, he's a tall man, so he's got to be pushing. He's got to be 3 bills plus.
His knees are shot. His back's probably shot.
It's probably all in pretty bad shape. In no world does it look cool to have like a 360-pound, 6'5" man sitting in a chair and a bunch of
swatting at somebody.
A bunch of jamokes come up at him, and he's like whoosh, 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 left and right. You know, like they could have thrown a rock at him or something. He's not going
to
move.
Or used.
He's not getting out of the chair. You know. And he loves to throw a motherfucker in there, and he says it with this, like, total street accent, you know? So no matter how Asian or Native American, whatever, he's like, who took my motherfucking money?
Or Creole, does they do that sometimes?
Now, see, talking about padding running time, you were ready to move on, and I just spent, like, I don't know how long.
It's a good point.
That's how you pad running time.
Right, so
you talk about reading, about your subject.
You get
you don't
themes.
Let it go.
Yeah, I
you
know.
Don't let it go.
I could go further with it if you want. I mean, hell, I was ready to rewrite the whole screenplay.
You gave it one star like 2 minutes into the review.
I wanted to just not forget to do that part. It's so important.
I'm going to give it one star also.
Yes. I'm not even sure.
It hurts me to do that.
Justify
it. It hurts
that.
Me to do that.
Yeah, it does. I really was hoping. Because you know that out of the four we saw in there, one of those was probably a 2.5.
You know, the farther away we get from his prime, if there ever was such a thing,
yeah,
the more I appreciate Glimmer Man. Glimmer Man was really fun.
You appreciate Glimmer Man because it was really like the last prime one, I think.
No, it was more so. It was like...
It's like a racer.
It was shot like Predator 2. Like, yeah. It was that kind of like... It had that like sepia tone...
A bit, maybe.
Color scheme, and it looked hot and humid, and it was in L.A., and it was about cops, and there was just something about it, you know, and it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
I like Glimmer Man.
Are you forgetting that was the one that had...
The credit cards?
That was the one that had Brian Cox as the weirdly sexual, creepy, like, what was he supposed to be? He was all Southern. He's like,
and
the one
that wasn't gay, yet lived in a studio loft in Skid Row with tons of... show tune posters
right,
all over the walls.
They just
musicals and Hollywood musicals and
weird ideas there and an irreconciled screenplay. Yeah, no, I get you, Glimmer Man. That was a thing. It was a thing. So
anyway,
you said
you were so eager to move on. What else?
I can keep going. I've got my letterboxed all dialed up with all the things I've watched recently. All kinds of stuff like Flashdance and The Presidio.
I remember Flashdance.
That's a weird movie. My review for the Flashdance passes the Bechdel test. There you go. Boom. Ha 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 ha.
That's good.
On Letterboxd. I watched Killing Zoe, or Zoe, depending on how you want to pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Avery.
Mm-hmm.
Meh. Wasn't great.
This is what we're doing now?
Yes. Yeah,
People could just go to your Letterboxd.
They could go to my Letterboxd.
And you're
I'm mainly just bringing it up to remind me of what I've watched recently. But I mean, what about you? You said you just watched...
Oh,
GG2.
I just
two.
Yeah,
did you like Guardians of the Galaxy 2 more, or better, or less?
I liked it more than I thought I would.
Compared to the first one.
Yeah, I think the reviews said it was pretty good, and then like I think my brother didn't like it.
Did he like the first one?
Yeah.
So
and he likes the Marvel movies.
Something just kind of scratched.
Yeah, he was just like it's kind of lame. So I kind of expected it to suck, but it was decent. You know, it was funny, and you know, it was pretty paint my numbers. But I thought it went in some weird directions, and yeah, I really didn't expect the story to do what it did. So it was cool. I liked it.
I would agree. Yeah, I mean the B story with Rocket and the
Udo
or whatever was interesting.
Yondo.
Yeah.
I like Rooker. You know, it's kind of weird. Kind of weird at this point in his career to give Michael Rooker like a plot line
like
role,
a pretty major prominent role in a major giant budgeted movie. Yeah, I like it though.
I wonder if at some point one of the executives was like, you realize you're giving Michael Rooker characters like his like the third most important role in the movie.
It's got to have been a James Gunn thing where he's like, this is my boy.
Yeah.
I'm writing for him. And then he talked about how he felt bad about killing him too.
Yeah.
But then he was like, that's true to the screenplay. That's a real screenwriter
there. Sure, sure. Kill your darlings even if they're Michael Rooker.
Kill your darlings.
I didn't know Sylvester Stallone was in it.
I didn't know either.
It was kind of funny at the end when it was him and Michelle Yeoh and
that's supposed to be the original Guardians.
Ving Rhames and is that who they're supposed to be? Oh, okay.
And apparently Miley Cyrus is the voice of the robot that's in the group because there's like a robot in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
They could have just used Joan Rivers. Sorry.
They should have.
What was that? Dot Matrix was her character from Spaceballs.
Spaceballs. Yeah. Classic.
Sadly, she died. And sadly, Miley Cyrus is still alive.
Oh.
Just kidding. Just kidding. I'm sure she's a great human. I watched Inglourious Basterds again, which I really like.
Right.
You think that's your favorite Tarantino?
Well, here's the thing. Like, there are...
Because he's genre-dabbled enough that I feel like it's hard to...
He has. And you know what? His output is different enough. All credit to him. You know, he's... As much as I really don't want to like him, and I don't a lot of the stuff he does, and I don't like him as a person, and I don't like the things he says sometimes, and I don't like the things he's obsessed with, and I don't... I'm not sure how I fall on the thing about him so freely loving the N-word and all those things. Okay, right, you know, all those things. But he is just such a great filmmaker. He really is. And he does things he's not supposed to and that shouldn't work. And they end up working because he makes them entertaining. And he takes stories and structures them in the way that that stories should not be structured. That movies should not be structured. He's the guy who does everything the way you are taught not to.
He tells a lot. He breaks up the narrative in weird ways and very kills your ways. Actions.
Yes, and he does. He breaks every rule and he makes it work, and that's to his credit. Because a lot of people, I think,
right?
Maybe it's just that more people don't get a chance to do that because
part of it,
because they don't have as much cachet as him, right?
That's an element, I think. But I think it's also one of those things where, like, in order to be a really good abstract painter, and I don't know if this is true, really, but, like, you know, something somebody would say, right, you have to kind of understand realistic form first. So he knows the structure, so he can deconstruct it and arrange it better. And he can realize, okay, by telling so much, I'm actually showing a lot about these characters because of the way he's probably gone over that line. So it's like a poetry, it's a George Carlin comedy routine. Words have an effect of showing you something.
I have big problems with all his movies. And
that's major.
And I think that is something that ends up sticking with me more than something that I find blandly great. You know, we've always talked about the flaws in something giving them more character than the successes.
Or just the idiosyncrasies
and
the differences.
But I feel like I have a huge problem with Django. I have a big problem with it. I really don't like the main character... The supporting character. The bad guy is great. His bad guys are always great. I keep going back to them because they're, I think, maybe not in spite of the problem, but because of the problem.
Yeah.
And I feel that with Inglourious Basterds. I always have. I don't like that it's an ensemble.
That's the problem for you, is it's an ensemble?
That's not the main problem. Like, everything about it is just so strange, yet it's supposed to be playing on certain tropes, and it's supposed to be an homage to a certain thing, but it's so much more than all those. Same thing with the Kill Bills. Same thing with, you know, I mean, Pulp Fiction is probably his best pure film, right? And that is a massive rule breaker. It does everything, you know, they're, you know, and so many people have done the chapter thing since him. But, like, the way he breaks them up, and then he doesn't even do it chronologically, and then it's hard to find a main character to follow all the way through. And even when you do, they're usually not likable.
Sure.
Right? I still haven't watched The Hateful Eight. I read the script before the movie came out, and I just haven't gotten around to it. I don't know. I don't feel like I need to for some reason. But
I felt like there was a weird reaction I had against when it was coming out.
But I keep coming back to, it shouldn't be, but it's fun, and it's this revenge thing, and it's like a lot of his stuff, it's about art, and it's about movies. You know, now, this one more so than a lot of his other things. It ends up being about movies. Most of his things, people talk about movies.
Sure.
They talk about things that reference what they are and reference what shaped the characters and who they're trying to be. And this one, you know, it's the same thing. And even, like, Fassbender's character, when Mike Myers, which is a great role, by the way, so weird, asks him what he did before the war, and he's a film critic.
Yeah.
And he specialized in German cinema. Uh-huh. And somehow that informs him going and doing this undercover thing.
You know? Right. Though I'd say, and it's probably like an easy win thing, everybody that wants to be cool and be seen like a hero or whatever will say, actually, if you ever revisit Jackie Brown, he
everyone likes Jackie Brown.
A subtlety of, like, I mean, to me, what I got out of it last time I watched it was like this sense of two older people whose lives maybe didn't go the way they wanted them to, kind of finding each other, and there's a bit of like a romance there. It's not like...
I'm fine with all that, but I feel like...
I thought that he did a good job of doing that without being super Tarantino about it. I know he didn't write the original source material, but like he...
I feel like Jackie Brown is still an Elmore Leonard thing.
It certainly is. I wouldn't say it's his best movie because of that. It's hard for me. It's not pure Tarantino.
Give him some auteurship.
But as a director, to say that he came in and he looked at this book and he took this material and he didn't explode it out and he didn't go... It was like an exercise in restraint. And for him to have done that so young, I'm not young necessarily, but like right at, that was basically what he followed up Pulp Fiction with, as far as I can remember. I mean, other than other things here and there. So, you know, screenplay for True Romance and stuff like that.
Yeah, I like it okay. I mean, I
don't love it. It's too long and it's super convoluted and like I still don't think I can follow what how the back and forth of it was by the time it was over. But at the end of the day, you know, there's just some interesting moments as I've gotten older. I'm kind of like, I get that.
Anyway, I there's another thing I really like about it is even though there are some outside shots, and the outside shots are great, they're set in these groves of trees. There's only a couple, but they happen.
For Inglourious Basterds?
Yeah. But the rest are in these very particularly lit indoor sets, and it reminds me of like a John Carpenter movie. Like,
the
sets are bright and kind of claustrophobic and fake looking. I love it.
Well, I love it. To me, what I got out of that, like, I think of like the big premiere at the end. That to me feels very well. Of course, it feels like this because it's a period movie, but and everyone's in tuxedos and stuff. But it seems very old timey Hollywood or something.
Kind
of. So I get what you mean about the claustrophobia of say the first scene with the two people at the table and the chair.
Well, not just that, but I mean,
and then
like,
the bar scene and the
bar scene. But even the scenes that are set in the big, you know, he has these two opulent rooms. One of them is a room Hitler is in where he's talking to the guys, and it's got the big, huge stuff on the walls, and the person's painting a picture of him in the cape while he's talking.
Right.
And then the opposite of that is the room that Mike Myers and Winston Churchill are in.
Right.
And it's a very similar room. You know, it's got a big fireplace, and I think what keeps bringing me back to it, I've watched it now like 5 times, is it's weird.
Oh, sure.
And it's weird for a Tarantino movie. And the reason why I've seen Django multiple times, you know, and the reason why I of course I've seen Pulp Fiction multiple times and everything, but like, there's something about the episodic nature of them. I don't know. There's something about the fact that he is able to, not that he's able to, just that he does. He drums up tension through dialogue when you're not supposed to. And he does it for like 10-minute long scenes.
Well, he understands that that's what makes movies work, and he understands that, like, pulling the strings with the audience kind of thing. So yeah, in his own mind, he's like, this isn't that big a deal, but I'm going to treat it like it is, and so what, you know? And I was just trying to think, you talk about the ensemble thing for Inglourious Basterds. I mean, even within Kill Bill, more so maybe in the second one, I feel like that's still kind of an ensemble.
It's like they're almost on there, but
you get multiple story elements, and so you can kind of be like, if you're bored with one bit of it, here you go to the next part, which Pulp Fiction definitely has. Kind of, I mean, yeah. So I wonder if they're all kind of like
Pulp Fiction. In Pulp Fiction, follows mini quests,
right? That's true, yeah.
And it's various characters' mini quests.
That's probably the most that way, yeah.
And Pulp Fiction, you know, for all it's good, and it's an all time great movie. For all that, it spawned, you know, multiple decades of horse shit.
Yeah.
Where people are like, I can do episodic stuff about nothing. And with people with guns and crime and
everything. Yeah, and have it be kind of funny because of these books that were written where criminals show the criminals can, like, you know, have a conversation that's funny. And then, Yeah, you got a lot of that quote-unquote indie crime stuff coming out. Like something like Killing Zoe, which was Roger Avery who co-wrote Pulp Fiction. Yes. Yeah, he turned right around and did that, and it's got bits of that. I mean, I don't think it really is aping Pulp Fiction too much on its own, but have you seen it? Have you seen it recently?
Yeah, I watched it
in 20 years or something.
20 years ago.
To me, it's just, I don't know, it just didn't seem like it knew what it was doing or something. Like, it's weird because it's basically like Aaron Stoltz is this guy who's going to be involved in this bank robbery with this other guy, and they're all French, but it's not like they're even all French. And they basically just, like, the first half of the movie is just them getting high and going to places the night before this robbery so that, like, they're just not planning it very well. And then they go in and, of course, stuff fucks up because they're not, they're fuck-ups. And right. Then it's just kind of like...
Another one people...
Whatever, point, you know?
People point to in that genre that everyone loves in retrospect and maybe didn't love so much in the time is Way of the Gun, which...
That was the Usual Suspects writer.
Right, yeah, right. That guy who's went on to be... Is that the one who went on to do...
Yeah.
McQuarrie?
Yeah, he did one of the Mission Impossibles and the Jack Reacher. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
People love that one, and they talk about it all the time, and I feel like I've seen that movie a billion times, but all I've really seen is other movies that are exactly like it.
Maybe. Yeah, I've only seen it once, and I don't remember liking it a lot.
Yeah.
I remember there being part... I feel like I could revisit it, but I don't. Wouldn't jump out.
People like crime, people like guns, people like things where conflict is more absolute than just... people arguing over things without any sort of consequences, you know? I don't know.
It's a part of it. And they want to kind of feel like, oh, that's kind of funny, or these guys are idiots, and so I'm better for not being the one that decided to rob a gas station when I was frustrated that one day, because look what happened to this guy, you know? It's like most soap opera stuff.
All right, let's talk about a little TV. What have you watched recently that's any good?
Well, I'm watching Better Call Saul Season 3 now.
Okay.
I'm about halfway through that. That's been pretty good. I mean, what gets to me for TV is problem solving. I mean, that's what all good writing is, right? Is you create a problem that, as someone observing it, is like, I don't know how they're going to make this work. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Okay, you've got to get this character from A to B. And now in a show like Saul, where it's a prequel, and you get that you kind of know where it has to get to, but then you see that they're putting all these... roadblocks there because it's a show, you're kind of like, well, how are they going to get there and make this work? And you're trying to, you know, that's what I do. That's my problem, right? I always just trying to, like,
right.
Think like a writer.
That's like an autism thing, though.
Kind of, yes. But whatever. I try to make it work for me. It makes me. Sorry.
I
would not apologize for myself. Except for this there.
Yeah, you just did.
I know.
Since I didn't finish Breaking Bad, I feel like I can't watch that. And people have been telling me I can anyway, but I don't really know if I want to. My problem is I have the thing where, unlike a lot of people who appreciate fine television,
right? Yeah,
I just won't commit that much of my life to watching stuff.
Oh, sure,
I can't. It takes anymore. A long time. Yeah. I can't anymore. And even if I wanted to, I think I would want to spend my time. Like, you know, I'm deeply involved in the outcome of sporting events.
Right. Yeah.
And it's hard for me to split that time up into also TV and movies now that I have children and things.
Oh, absolutely.
Like that.
Yeah. No, people at a certain point in time, you're
supposed to be writing still and all these things. But I still do watch TV, and I really did like
this. Let me just interrupt you for a moment. This is why people are going to start to need entertainment coaches, because there's so much content out there now that if you could just have somebody tell you, Zach, you were looking for a TV show, but you don't want to test out 5 different TV shows and waste 20 hours of your life. Based on what you've told me you like and everything else, I would tell you that you should check out these two, and in 2 episodes, you'll know for sure.
That's so hard.
No, that would be an easy. That would be a fun job. I like that kind of stuff.
So I'll tell you what I like.
Right.
And my problem is I've seen the pilot or 2 or 3 episodes of several shows that I really like.
Oh, that's the problem.
But at the same time, I'm still watching Game of Thrones. I'm watching Fargo. Like, all these things I have to watch. I watch The True Detectives. I watch this. I watch that. I really like American Gods. I've only watched the first...
I've read the book.
3 episodes. I really like Banshee. Banshee is awesome.
I have had that in my Amazon queue for a while, and the idea sounds really great, but I just haven't...
It's so good.
Yeah,
it's
I'll have to check it out.
But my problem is... Every time one of these things is good, I'm like, damn it.
Uh-huh.
Why can't it suck? I don't want to, I can't. I don't have time.
It's a plague of plentifulness or something. I understand, yeah. I mean,
literally, you see so many TV critics and people on Twitter who are like, you know, and they're talking about these things like, it's just this peak TV thing. And it's problematic for them. And their job is to watch it. Their job is to watch TV and write about it all day long.
Well, we're at the point where it's starting to break. And you're starting to see, like, okay, so, like, this was good and this was good. But then, you know, like, I haven't watched the, like, 3rd or 4th season of Orphan Black.
It's not to say that
it's gotten bad. I just to say that I can kind of walk away from it.
You know, Disney announced they're starting their own streaming service. All these things are doing that. But I feel like we've already reached a saturation point and that they're a little late because... CISO just folded. Several of these things that were made specifically for this purpose have folded recently because Netflix is like $22 billion in debt. Something ridiculous, right? all these things where all these fantastic stuff that was not safe enough to go on network can now go on other things. And that when you realize there's so many good creative people out there who can make these fantastic stories that, like we've always said, you can tell better because you're not cramming them in 2 hours, right? Sure. Instead, you're cramming them in 14 hours or 30 hours or whatever you want to do. And so you can develop these things to great lengths. But the problem is there's only so many places for them until they had apps and stations and all these different things.
So Netflix is being smart. They might be in debt, but they're going to have the content when everybody falls back to them. Netflix
will survive.
Because almost nobody doesn't have Netflix. Everybody might have
HBO does something. You know, I mean, Amazon for a while was getting by, and that's why they have their own content now. Yeah. What they were doing, though, is Prime, they had a contract to show a whole bunch of HBO things. That's going away.
Yeah.
After this year, they won't have Deadwood and all that stuff anymore. You know, so all those things. Everyone's going to have their own thing, but I think we've reached a saturation
point because into cable, basically.
Not many people can afford to pay for cable, to pay for internet, to pay for this, and then also pay for 15 different apps to watch one show each
time. I knew this was going to happen 10 years ago, but
I think here's what's going to happen. A lot of the stuff that's barely good enough that maybe is intriguing is going to go away.
Oh, and Netflix and is starting canceling stuff.
The better things are going to be what remains.
You'd hope what it is.
I hate to say this, but I hope we have fewer choices in the future.
Well, no, but better choices. And you'd hope that that's what it ends up being.
Fewer better choices.
Right, well, Netflix canceled the Girl Boss. They canceled Marco Polo, and they canceled Sense8. And I watched both seasons of Marco Polo.
They just canceled something that got really good reviews with Naomi Watts, also some sex detective thing.
Oh, yeah, right. I don't know what that was about.
I never even heard of it, but apparently they canceled
it. And that's the thing is, like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think Sense8 or Marco Polo were getting, like, stellar insanity good stuff, but they were doing different things with them. I mean, Marco Polo was a mostly Asian cast. It was a lot of adventure stuff in, like, a setting that you don't see in most kinds of stories.
AMC has some Asian Western
Badlands
show.
Well, that's not Asian. It just has, like, an Asian lead.
But it always seemed intriguing to me. But I don't have the time or wherewithal to bother with it, right?
I'm not going
to
bother. I haven't bothered with Preacher or whatever. I don't care.
Yeah, Preacher? Like, I still haven't watched Legion. There's all these things that I am going to watch.
Legion's
like
8 episodes, though. I know. That's what's great. It's 8 episodes, and then they'll do another season in a year.
It's going
to
get more.
I don't know that it'll get more than 8.
I still haven't finished the Marvel shows, which I want to.
You can Iron Fist. I will tell you right now, don't waste your time.
I heard Iron Fist sucks. Everyone I know. It's too bad. Everyone I know said it's garbage.
And you could probably not watch any of the
Defenders.
Yeah,
I have to watch Iron Fist now.
They'll probably even know that people didn't like it and like be like, oh yeah, it's upshot of the deal, the guy's basically like Batman / Green Arrow, but he's got
it's the same
magic
story for
power. Everybody. Yeah, they're all rich. Hand, yeah.
I watched Girls Trip with Kristen a few weeks ago. Black
comedy.
Well, not dark comedy.
Oh, is it a dark comedy? I don't know what this is. It basically
black
like
skin.
Is it like a female version of Very Bad Things or something? Like bachelor party and somebody
like
dies.
Rough Night and all that stuff. Okay. But it's not, and it's much more whatever. There's this one girl. I guess her name is Tiffany Haddish. So there's these four girls that are four lifelong friends, right? It's Queen Latifah, it's Jada Pinkett Smith.
What's the premise of them going on a trip? Or
it's just one of the girls is like an Oprah type, and she's going to do something, and she's getting her gang back together. They haven't seen each other. They've fallen apart. Anyway, the fourth girl is this girl I've never seen, Tiffany Haddish, and she was incredible. She was so funny. It was a firecracker, right? Just fantastic.
But not forcing it, not like
it was. So
look at me, how funny I am.
It was very funny, and she was very good,
natural and good,
and
as a comedian.
And I ended up enjoying that a lot. The reason why I bring it up is because the Luke Cage guy was in it, and he's like the cheating husband guy. And I remember I was looking at a scene, and he's talking. He had his head just at a certain angle, and he already has a big head. We know that, right?
Right.
And his ears are like completely flat onto his head because his head is so big. And it also bulges out in the back, kind of like Sam Cassell or the Xenomorph.
Yeah, right.
However, he's also got a vein. And at the right angle, the wrong angle, I should say, when his face is looking a certain way at a character and the camera's on it, you not only get this huge bulge sticking out here, but you also get the vein, so it sticks out even further. So there are scenes when it looks like this guy's head is literally shaped like the alien's head, the Xenomorph's head. Like,
oh my god.
Like just. And I was like, oh. I was like, ah. I was like bothered while I was watching the movie, and I was like pointing it to Kristen, like, you see this? The dog's having fun, looks like.
Just. Is it time for a walk or what?
No. He's just playing. He grabs a toy and he runs around and attacks it. This is him playing.
Does he like to play outside, though?
He's a lap dog.
Oh, I get it.
He could get picked up by a sparrow. So I had, you know, there's too many shows to watch. That's it. You know,
you feel like you've done more, something. There are something more sophisticated when you watch a movie, as opposed to just watching a couple episodes.
No, I'd rather just get in and get out of something.
Well,
no,
that's true too.
Even if it's crap.
I'm liking miniseries is coming back. Things like Young Hope and stuff, or like True Detective, you mentioned, where it's 8 episodes and you're done. What did you think of season 2 of True Detective? I watched that not too long ago.
It was weird. I liked it.
I liked it. I didn't think it was bad. I think that if it had come before the other one probably wouldn't have happened because people wouldn't have been like, this is amazing. They would have been like, this is okay.
Right.
But then because it came after, everyone was like, this is not this other thing. But when you look at the other, I haven't rewatched True Detective yet, but I kind of want to. I think I could one time just for the hell of it and the right mentality. But I'm not sure what there really is there. But I'm also fairly certain I wouldn't be like blown away like everyone seemed to be at the time. You know, things have weird cultural zeitgeist. There still is, as much as everyone's like insular and binge watching stuff, there is this odd kind of like, it's like binge watch water cooler mode where it's like, this is the thing everybody's watching now and talking about, and oh my god, it's so great, it's amazing, when it's on or whatever. It's always the HBO show that's on at the time.
Well, there are only a few shows where I will make sure that I'm watching it when it's out, and that's Game of Thrones, and I'm probably gonna do that with the Westworld.
Is that just because you're so scared of just basic
purpose? No. No, I don't care about that. I care about them, and they're also dark and violent. And,
right, yeah, sure.
And they're interesting, kind of mysterious things. I don't know how they end.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
You know? So I think I did that with, you know, I cared about Justified. Most of these things I don't really care what happens in American Gods, but it's really good. Okay. It's funny, and it's like violent and cool and weird. And Jeff mentioned on something that he missed my nudity, no nudity rating.
Uh-huh, right. Like, that was your Letterboxd.
That's really all that matters to me in most things. And so, like...
So HBO always gets a win.
It usually does. But there's a few movies I've watched where it's like, this sucks. And there's just, like, a couple of scenes of just, like, way too much nudity. And I'm like, man, how did they convince that person to do that much nudity? And then I'm just like, man, that was... I just keep thinking about the new... You know, I've been watching old slashers again. Yeah. And so I watched Silent Night, Deadly Night, and it really is great. It's so funny, unintentionally and intentionally.
Right.
And there's just so much nudity. So many people banging. And I love that. And, you know, there's... I always think of the scene where he just killed that one girl who ended up being a whole bunch of different things, Night of the Living Dead and all that stuff. And Return of the Living Dead. And he just killed her on the antlers, and the girl's sister... is looking for her. And she's like, oh, Santa, hey. And he's obviously not Santa, and he bends down, and he's like, ugh. She's like, hey, Santa, what's up? Hey, thanks for visiting my house. And he's like, ugh. She's like, she says something else, and he's like, have you been naughty? She's like, no, I've been nice all year. And he's like, really? He's like, yeah, I've been nice. And meanwhile, he's reaching behind his, you know,
Santa coat, jacket.
And he's getting something out, and it's a knife. He's like, are you sure? And she's like, yeah, I'm nice. And he goes, okay. And he gives her a knife as a present. And he's like, see ya.
That's good.
Like, there's just stuff like that. And like,
but that's intentionally funny. Like,
I don't know.
There's no way that they make that, like, and they don't think that's funny.
The stuff with the grandpa in the beginning.
Right.
Have you seen it in a while?
I have not seen it ever, actually.
Oh, it's so good. You have to watch Silent Night, Deadly Night. It's so good.
I definitely have a blind spot when it comes to
it. Do you remember the guy from the first few Friday the 13th who's warning everyone that they're doomed?
Maybe. So, is it Friday the 13th?
That's a guy, yeah.
Oh, right. He's always at the gas station.
He's at the gas station all the time. He rides his bike around. He ends up getting killed in the second one. But he's like, he's such a bad overactor, and he's like, you're all doomed! And he goes out of his way to go hunt kids down and to pop out of closets and tell them they're doomed, and then he just walks away, and they're like, what is with this dude? You know, like, everyone acted like that in Silent Night, Deadly Night. It's just great. Like, a lot of those old slashers are just so good, man. And I got pissed off because I'm going through and watching the Friday the 13th, and the third one is, you can only find it on the Kodi thing as the stupid 3D version. And they didn't even re-release that until the Blu-ray came out. So why is that the only thing you can download online? It's just the stupid 3D version that you have to have, like, old-timey red blue glasses for.
You have to go get
I don't have those.
Box of Lucky Charms from 1987.
I don't have those. Well, how am I supposed to watch the movie? Like, for
20 years, you could only get the 2D version. Mm-hmm. How come I can't find the 2D version anywhere? There's no such thing as video stores anymore.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to go rent it?
Even in McKinleyville.
You don't even have the answers. There's still a Figueroa's in Fortuna. I should go check there.
That's where you should go.
I'm working there right now, so maybe I will.
No, yeah, I did a little revisit on some of the Friday the 13th here a couple months ago. I think we watched like 6 and 7 and 8 or something.
Mm.
Or no, 8's Manhattan, so we watched 4, 5, and 6 maybe? I don't know. The ones that are supposed to be kind of a weird
trilogy. I really want to get into the newer ones. I never watched the whole series. I really want to get into the newer ones. So I'm starting from the beginning and going through. I'm going to do the Nightmare on Elm Streets. I did Sleepaway Camp. Now, there's a lot of pretty stupid stuff out there.
Oh, yeah.
But I really like those old slashers. I like things where they just have, like, an inventive practical effects thing of people's heads blowing up or, like, things boiling out of them and stuff like that. Like, that's great. That's what I want to see.
No, I'm down with you. I'm more... I like a good, like, monster.
You know, even that first Friday the 13th is weird because it's so slow. Most of the deaths are, like, off-screen and stuff. But that thing where Kevin Bacon is killed is really good. He's laying in the bed, and the knife comes up through his throat.
Now, isn't that Johnny Depp in the first one?
No, that's Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm talking about Friday the 13th.
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
Like, there's a couple of pretty good things where it's, like, the effects look pretty good. And I'm always... That's the thing that's great about those, is, like, the practical effects make you think, like, wow, that's cool, they did that. Because now you watch anything like that, and it's, like, there's no mystery to how it was made, because it's CGI, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
So... I don't know, I like the mystery of practical effects.
Or there's no mystery to it because they made such a big deal about telling you that they did it practically that, like, that, you know...
Even that is, like, awesome. Like, I like things where...
Oh, I mean, it's not... I'm not...
You know, where somebody's body is obviously being torn apart. And like, oh, it's got to be animatronic arms. That's I love that. I don't know.
A little RoboCop 2 action for you?
Yeah. That's also on my thing.
I don't know, but I rewatched that a couple months ago.
I never like it that much when I rewatch it, but it's still better than 3.
Of course. That's like saying, I don't know what, that's like saying that food is better than dirt or something. Yeah, RoboCop 3 is not so great. I've been watching movies, but I've been watching shows, and I've been kind of, I got the same issue you do with just wanting to kind of hope there's not so many good ones. But I don't know. Like, you kind of just, if you like,
you also have the added luxury of being such a contrarian that when you hear something's good, you're automatically like, no, it's not. I'll prove that it's not.
And then I watch one and I'm like, it's bad. Yeah. And I'm always tweeting about how bad stuff is and not like, oh my God, Legion's amazing. Or I hear the Expanse is really good, but I haven't watched that yet. I don't know. Shows are fun. Have you watched the last two episodes of season 6 of Game of Thrones recently? Just because I was going to start season 7? Or... Now, how is this working with season 7? Dustin was trying to explain to me. They're going to do... there's a total of 15 episodes.
Yes.
But they're going to do the break it into 2. Now, is that a weird legal thing why they do that? Where they make a longer season
part 1 and 2? No, but they did that with a bunch of them. They filmed parts of seasons 2 and 3 at the same time. So they've done that a bunch of different times. Okay, and they knew what seasons 7 and 8 were.
Yeah.
And they just filmed them all.
Well, of course, right. Yeah.
And one reason why they have to do that is because there's so many kid actors that if you wait too long, suddenly they're going to be 30.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, already Arya looks like she's old, and Bran looks like he's old, and all the characters.
I think part of that was a purposeful thing, like, especially when you look at What's-Her-Name, who is supposed to be kind of a woman now, and supposed to be a little, supposed to be, like, 13 in the first season.
Sure,
it's like they had to kind of switch the gears on this so that it wouldn't be so...
Yeah, no, you're right. It does make it look like the age, which is cool, I guess. And it makes it seem like more time has passed than it has.
Which I still feel is hard to gauge because they've always got the winter is coming thing, but you never get a sense of, like, to me it's like it could have been 2 years, it doesn't feel like it's been 10 years.
I'm not going to spoil anything, but in season 7 it seems, you know, I'm four, I guess
as far the
fifth
as
episode
anyone,
is tonight,
yeah.
But
I've only watched three, right?
Yeah. But anyway, it's moving so fast. It suddenly is just like bang, bang.
It started
bang,
doing
bang,
that in
bang,
season
bang.
6, though.
But it took so many seasons to get there, and people every once in a while did complain that it was spinning its wheels. And it
three,
never really
three
was
the
was
worst
just setting stuff up. But I feel like that stuff is important for development of story and character and everything.
It's like the part of a boring part of a book or something.
So whenever I see that, I'm like, I kind of miss it compared to the stuff that's just slammed out really fast.
Because you know,
remember the end of Justified,
rushing to the end.
So the end of Justified felt like they went through several seasons worth of material in the last couple episodes.
Yeah,
just because they were like, we got to tie up all these ends. Bang,
yeah,
bang, bang,
they
bang,
had
bang,
too
bang,
many ends,
right?
Still. Yeah,
yeah. And I feel like they're doing that in Game of Thrones, and that's one problem they had by starting the series before it was done.
before the books were done was
the success of it
dictated that he had to move in different directions.
Yeah,
because he couldn't just do whatever he wanted. He had to change it. He probably knew that maybe the end needed to come sooner than he was originally planning, and all these things like that. I feel like I'm kind of worried that it's going to end
rushed
in a really rushed way.
It's possible. I mean, it even to me, it felt that way as season six started to close. But to me, it was like kind of a good, like, okay, you're building up your momentum. And I think what you're talking about there is similar to what you have in like the kind of dilemma of a good trilogy in movies, where like the Lord of the Rings or even Star Wars to a degree, whereby that last part, that even the, or even just the second, the last act or the last half of the last part, you're just tying up loose ends. You're just rushing towards, it's a big battle, it's a big finale. And like, even like, we're at a point where like that, this whole new season, like last season of Game of Thrones, is essentially like the last 40 minutes of Return of the King or something, basically. I mean, or could be. And where you're like, okay, it's not as interesting as when like there was more stakes and more characters and like, you know, Helm's Deep, which is to me still the pinnacle of the most, I mean, once the Ents decide to raid Sauron's tower, that is like when the whole series peaks.
Sure.
Because the most is happening and the most stakes. And like you said, you don't really know what's going to happen to everything. But with Game of Thrones especially, because you don't really know.
Well,
with Game of Thrones
now, it's turned into such a big franchise. And it's turned into something that's been so successful for them that, you know, rightly, they're going to be spinning it off. And
that will be interesting.
George R. Martin has ideas and he's already done things where he's written small things about characters from way in the past.
Right.
And also some things concurrently. But I guess their goal is like, you know, they're probably going to do the Star Wars-ish type thing. Like, they can pick it up later, you know, after he dies. I'm sure he'll give the property to someone to keep doing. Because this isn't something, like, I think people, because it's on HBO, don't realize that it gets, like, HBO can do whatever they want with the rest of their programming,
mm-hmm.
and it can make no money, and they can keep things on the air, take them off, it doesn't matter, because it is so successful.
Right.
So successful. Like, we don't understand. It's hard to think about because we don't really deal in like mm-hmm. Nielsen ratings so much anymore. It's a tremendous, tremendous success for them. It absolutely is such a money maker for them that they can do no wrong with anything else, which gives them the freedom to do whatever, you know? Sure. Which is
but that doesn't last forever,
but it doesn't. But
those writers get bored with it, turn it over to somebody
else.
That's
how they understand that, like, you know, I mean, J.K. Rowling ended the Harry Potter series. They mm-hmm. realized there was way more money to be made off.
Of course,
so spin it off, keep spinning it off.
Spin it off with prequels, you know? And people will maybe abide a bit.
And then years in the future, she's going to Lucas it and be like, "I'm going to bring back the main characters." I guarantee you, she's going to. She's going to bring back Harry and all those people, and we get to see them when they're in their 50s or whatever.
Yeah, which is she really did shoot herself in the foot with that ending, at least from I only know the movies, where it's like, let's show them all
that was
swollen and British, yeah. And like, okay, how are you going to backpedal on that? Maybe they just have a training montage and they get all into shape as wizards. Yeah, we got to go out shape. Now. We got to go out. And
yeah, you know, the movie series was already full of people with the body shape of Brendan Gleeson, so it didn't really matter.
Yeah, I guess, you know, so. They'll just be that way, and, right? Yeah,
you don't have to have any sort of physical prowess to be a wizard.
But, I mean, it's fun when things start to wrap up.
It would be like saying if the original Star Wars series,
right,
which didn't really last that long, the original Star Wars
stories,
you know, Star Wars, Star Trek is what I mean.
Oh, Star Trek?
Star Trek. It think if it had been a smash success and they just stopped.
In the 60s?
Right? Yeah. So all the spinoffs and everything are because people liked it.
But that gets to be an extra weird thing of like there was time to breathe too, because people liked it in reruns and stuff, because it's a long time after the series was canceled before that first motion picture comes out. And the way that they chose to do that motion picture and not recast anything or start over, but rather go back to those old TV actors and then put them in a big movie with big visual effects. It's an interesting thing to look at. Like, I would imagine if somebody just did Star Trek in order, having never watched any, was like, okay, I'm going to watch these kind of cheesy shows. And then, okay, now here's the movie. Whoa, holy crap, it's the same universe, it's the same, it's an interesting shift. I don't know what to make of it, the popularity, but we started seeing the opposite happen now. We just had it happen twice with the King Arthur. They had six movies figured out, and that didn't do so well, and now Dark Tower just You know, somebody took a potty in its mouth.
I feel like they screwed up with that. The King Arthur is like, you know, that would be a hard one to do because you already have the success.
I've heard it was fun, but I didn't see it. And the trailer did not look appealing to me. Yeah. Well, I like some of his stuff. I don't mind, but...
But, like, the Dark Tower thing absolutely should have been a prestige TV thing.
I'm thinking so, yeah.
Absolutely should have. It sounds like this was just a rushed, jumbled thing. Like, I understand wanting to make a movie, but couldn't they have presumably made more money if they made an HBO series out of that or something?
I thought
they'd
been working on that for a while, so maybe it was just not happening.
Could go on. I mean, considering that those books are so voluminous and that they have so many tie-ins to all the other stories and stuff, they could have just made... Stephen King could have made... $50 billion off of, you know, a long-form TV series.
Oh, absolutely.
Prestige TV series, you know? You could have told every story in all the ways.
Connected it to Under the Dome.
Yeah, right. All that stuff, you know? Not that he's hurting for money, and I understand wanting to keep some sort of creative control over things and not have your stuff kind of look sell out and stuff. But to be fair, the guy's always been a guy who writes stuff for, you know, airport bookstores.
Yeah, a lot of his stuff is pretty sell out and stuff. Did you see that Hulu series that was talking about your one season, like it's like 6 or 8 episodes with Franco about that? That was the Stephen King story. I forget what it's called. Is it like
1963
or something? Like whatever. Yeah. No,
it didn't seem interesting.
It's got interesting bits. I think I watched.
That's one of the things, man. Yeah. That's one of those shows that I just wouldn't even.
No, I would say that if you weren't interested, it didn't pique your interest for any reason, I wouldn't bother with it. That's an easy one. But though it is a single in and out done kind of thing, you could...
But I'm not necessarily looking for that. I'm looking for...
Good,
you know,
stuff,
first of all, if it's interesting, you know, like...
Right.
Subject matter matters to me. If it seems interesting, if it's interesting and it gets out, great.
And it's got nudity and violence.
Sure. And if it's interesting and it drags on and on and on...
No. Then it's not interesting anymore.
Okay, but at a certain point you lost me and then I'm mad at you that you made me stick with it. But that doesn't happen so often, and like...
They've gotten better about that with the quote-unquote prestige stuff. Like, even with the Game of Thrones thing or something, they're kind of like, no, we are going to wrap this story up because we know that it just, you know, the backlash is not worth it when you just keep going.
Right.
I hope. It's one thing to do spin-offs or whatever. There'll be like a Frasier version. Who would you do a spin-off for Game of Thrones? If you could do one, which character would you do? Or what storyline or kind of spin-off would you do?
That's a dumb question. I don't want to answer it.
Okay, fine. I was just spitballing.
I feel like people like the squire with the big dick.
Oh, yeah, Podrick or whatever.
Yeah, people like a character like that. So you do kind of like a bumbling comedy thing with him. You could do a show like that, you know, where he goes through the universe. And...
Yeah, there you go. You answered the question.
Yeah, I didn't want to, but
Poddick. Delightful.
He's back.
Always keep it classy here on the FP.